NBA fans, it's time for the Love of the Pod. Here are your basketball presenters, Chris Bleck and Jonathan Hood.
This is For the Love of the Pod, our NBA podcast right here on ESPN.com and, the Hood Podcast. I'm Jonathan Hood, along with Chris Bleck. So glad that you're with us. If you're an NBA fan, you've come to the right place. Chris Bleck is with us as we review the first half of the NBA season. I guess the Bulls are included in that as well because the Bulls are in the NBA. And Chris joins us here. Hello, Chris.
Jonathan, first half of the NBA season, and how about last night? Last night was an incredible night for the league. So we have so many different storylines to get to and kind of a review of what we looked at heading into the season and where we're at now in the NBA year.
We'll start first with the Bulls here in Chicago. It is been really disappointing to see where the Bulls have gone last time you and I have talked, because you see the firing of Fred Hoiberg and then the mutiny. I don't think there's a worse situation in the league right now than Chicago. Now, there's been some backbiting back and forth on social media between players and teams, but for the team itself, what's going on in Chicago, it's like nothing else that we've seen in the league.
Yeah, it's really disappointing because if we take a larger picture view of this whole season and like where we're at heading into the year, real plus minus projections on ESPN.com had the Bulls winning 28 games. Sportsbook for the over under win total for the year had the Bulls at 29.5. Right now they have 10 wins, and I was very vocal ahead of the season saying this team's going to go way over what most projections are suggesting because they have the talent to do so. Now, you could look at that one of two ways. You could, one, say that I'm completely wrong, or two, you could also look at it with a measured approach and say, did you see the Brooklyn Nets last night?
Right.
The Nets last night, the Nets record right now, they're 23-23. That's like basically what I was suggesting the Bulls to be this season, yet we have the injuries to start the year. We have the head coaching firing and hiring of Jim Boylan as your permanent head coach. And you're basically dismantling a team in progress, even though none of the parts were there to begin with to start the season. And thus you are tanking this year without admitting that you're tanking to the public. And like I think the projections from all the different places, ESPN, Sportsbook, and Gamblers, and everyone else, I think the projections were right on. This Bulls team has the talent to be around 500, to be where Charlotte is in 8th, 20-23, to be where the Pistons are in 9th, 19-24. There's no reason why the Bulls shouldn't be 9 to 8 games better than what they are right now. Now, with that long-term view, if you focus in on the season, basically what it seems to me as an outsider is that John Paxson didn't like the way things were going and decided to sabotage the season by implementing a head coach who has no damn idea what he's doing in Jim Boylan, and completely cut Fred Hoiberg at the knees, don't allow him to continue, don't allow him to have any success once players come back, once they're healthy, allow Remarkin, other guys who rehab and join the team of Chris Dunn. All of those things matter, and I think the fact that Boylan took over the team when he did cemented the fact that this team was going to tank this season. And you made the comment that, like, I guess they're a part of the league. Yeah, it's pathetic. They're out on the West Coast last week to Golden State and to the Lakers, and, like, it's such an afterthought. Those used to be marquee games, going to the West Coast, playing the best teams in the league. And it's just a laughing stock to the rest of the league based on the mutiny with Jim Boylan and everything that's going on. And I don't think the front office and the organization and ownership understand the long-term damage that they've done in the first 2 months of this season based on the fact that they had to get Fred Hoiberg out as soon as possible.
Chris, you and I have talked about this before, about culture, right? The word culture is very powerful, because whether it's in your family, whether it's your business, and we're talking about sports entertainment with the Chicago Bulls, you've got to be able to establish a culture. I don't care if you're Chicago, if you're the New York Knicks, if you're the Atlanta Hawks, Phoenix, you're just trying to figure out, okay, so what do we stand for? What is our mission statement? Who are we, right? And so when I'm watching the Bulls basketball and seeing after the Fred Hoiberg administration, here comes Jim Boylan. I know that he's an assistant coach, becomes a head coach, but there is no real culture that's set What's the culture that you're setting? The culture that you're setting is that I can do as many push-ups as you can. I'm going to take the air out of the basketball and not have you be able to, get up and down the floor, run with pace. It's just the opposite. It's actually gotten worse to me since Hoiberg left. And I just think that the culture of the team is disenchantment because they want to get up and down the floor. They want to be able to score with the rest. And Boylan, as you've seen in some of these games, and it's been very well documented from theathletic.com, Stephen Noe and all these guys that, put videos out there for us to see on Twitter, how slow the Bulls look, how they're trying to get it down in the post. This ain't the 1990s, man. You're trying to make Robin Lopez an all-star? Why? He doesn't even want to be here. So the culture has been the issue since the Jordan era, and it continues to be a problem.
Okay, so since last season, since I don't have numbers between the difference of Hoiberg and Boylan from this year, last season the Bulls were 10th in pace. And if we go to this season, the Bulls this season have dropped all the way to 23rd. In pace. Wow. Now, pace is up across the league, but the Bulls are still well below league average now at 23rd. And you're right, Jonathan. Like, it's the thing that bothers me about the whole situation is, like, I brought up the Nets to start because you understand their program, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I do.
They play hard. They're up and down the floor. They move the ball. They're playing current 2019 NBA basketball. They just don't have the talent that other teams who are really good in the league have. Now, they're competing with some of those teams, and we saw them last night beat the Houston Rockets in a fantastic basketball game. But you can tell that guys within their program are getting better and they're being developed. And I think that's the key and why people should be so excited about the Brooklyn Nets because, by the way, they also have a crap load of cap space heading into the future, too. So you don't think that people in New York, like saying New York's a big spot, a big city, Kenny Atkinson is a really good head coach, they're winning ball games, they're fun, it's an attractive atmosphere, the whole thing makes a lot of sense. None of that applies to the Chicago Bulls. None of it. This Jim Boylan era of Bulls basketball, backing it down like it's 1997 and Mark Jackson is backing you down from the three-point line to the block while wearing a wristband on his entire forearm, that's not going to cut it. And you're right, and the way the offense looks being 23rd in the NBA is terrible. And, the thing that's bothersome about the whole situation is that your young players – Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen are not being developed the proper way. And I know that if people with the Bulls heard that, they would tell me that I'm wrong. The problem is, if you watch current NBA basketball, no centers are posting up on the block and calling for the ball. Why in the world would Wendell Carter Jr. be on the block in any play? No!
Right.
He should be treated like a center who goes up, picks, pops, dives, and does all the stuff that other bigs in the league are doing at this moment. And I think that is the type of thing that, like, is so bothersome. Lauri Markkanen should not be backing someone down and trying to go one-on-one. He should be in pick and rolls, popping, and then using his ability to shoot and stretch the floor to hurt the defense. And it seems like current NBA offensive schematics are not being used by the Chicago Bulls. And really, the only person you can blame is John Paxson because he's the one calling all the shots within the organization.
Yeah, it's something, man. It really is. I do want to get your thoughts, though, about Bulls Nation Twitter coming after you because I see this every day anytime that you're bringing up something smart about the Bulls and some Bulls fans don't like it. What's the flavor from Bulls Nation Twitter against you?
I think currently the flavor is that, give it time, they'll figure it out, right? There's for some reason, there's this thing in the city of Chicago, the great city that we live in, where Bulls fans have this belief that John Paxson and Gar Foreman will figure it out. Well, haven't we seen enough data to understand that that's not the case? Like, okay, let's put this one thing out of the realm. Barring Zion Williamson coming to the Bulls and saving the day, how do they get out of this mess?
Right. Right. There is no answer to that because again, you can continue to stockpile draft picks, but we have seen teams that have done that for decades and still not be a contender. You can do that. That's fine. But it comes back to the word culture. Get Zion Williams to be the worst team in the NBA and get lucky in the lottery and get to have be the number one pick. But where are you going after that? And that's the thing. How do you grow from that?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that a lot of C-Red Nation and Bulls fans who come at me, come at you, come at people on Twitter, and like especially Nick. Like now that he's not even covering the Bulls anymore, he'll be at a Warriors game, and people will be coming at him, be calling him a hater and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, you just don't understand the way this organization is ran. The Chicago Bulls do not run the organization as if winning an NBA championship is the first and foremost most important thing to accomplish at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It really isn't. They run it as if it is a restaurant, and as long as people are coming and going, they're fine with that. As long as there's people making reservations, buying the season tickets, showing up to UC, that's all that really matters. It doesn't matter if the food's any good. They don't care. They don't want Michelin-rated star awards. They just want to make sure people are showing up. Wow. And for their benefit, the way this city works is there are still many people who have the great feelings of the 90s Bulls in their heart, and they want to go on out to the United Center. That's great. Enjoy yourself. There's no reason. It's a fun time. But if you are someone who enjoys sports because you want to see your favorite team win, I mean, good luck to you. I mean, I'm at a loss based on all the moves they've made over the last couple of years, and none of them seem to make any sense in trying to get into the direction of winning basketball in 2019.
I don't understand what they're trying to do there, especially when the whole thing with Jim Boylan, who knows if Boylan was stabbing Hoiberg in the back the entire time? Who the hell knows right. How that was going to work? But the point is
Jonathan, think about it. They weren't in shape, and they didn't like the way things were being done. Well, Boylan was the lead assistant. Was he not?
Yes.
He was there. He's a part of the problem, too. What you're telling me, they weren't in shape. You're not a part of the coaching staff? Come on, please. Get out of here.
See, that's part of, and you talk about culture, that's part of the losing culture. That type of, when you are that type of team in which you feel Fred Hoiberg is the issue, but yet Jim Boylan, not only as an interim, you're going to have him back next year. And as we learned from Joe Colley from the Sun-Times, a little bit of a bump up there in salary. It's just like, I tell you what, in some spots, it's nothing like failing up. It's amazing how you fail up.
Well, I mean, and there's clearly no accountability, right? Because here's the thing. I understand. This same situation happened in Cleveland with Larry Drew. Larry Drew didn't want to be the interim coach. He said if he was going to be the head coach, he needed a head coaching contract. That's right. Fine. There's no reason that the Bulls could not have given Jim Boylan a contract for the rest of this season and then said, we will review what we're going to do going forward once we get to the offseason. I would not have had a problem with that. I don't think you would have either.
No.
But what is odd is that they make these decisions without actually doing the work of finding a right solution. You know, like, and if someone were to ask me over there, like, well, what would you do, Bleck? Well, what I would do is I would have open interviews to interview 5 to 6 candidates to be my next head coach. I just wouldn't go with the guy who's been around who may have been sandbagging my head coach from the start. You know, like, why wouldn't you interview Mike Brown?
Right.
He's one of the lead assistants for Steve Kerr. He's won in the league with high-profile players like LeBron James. Now he's with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. He has a track record of being successful. Why wouldn't you want to interview someone like Mike Brown as your head coach?
By the way, Chris, this breaking news here. Good solid tank win for the Knicks as they lose 101 to they lose 101-100 to the Washington Wizards. That's in London, England. That's a final as the Knicks fall by one.
So they now go to 10-34, which means they're tied with the Bulls for the second worst record in the NBA.
That is correct, sir. And the Wizards playing good basketball lately, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, shocking how the Wizards play better when John Wall is not on the court.
okay.
It's a little bit of that Dwight Howard syndrome, right?
Well, there's no question.
By subtraction.
What did we talk about before the season started, okay, with that guy?
Well, if I'm a Bulls fan, why are you not interviewing Mike Brown? Why are you not interviewing someone like a Patrick Ewing, who has been a lead assistant in the league for a long time, now doing his own thing in college? But just because he's a big guy doesn't mean he shouldn't get an interview. How about Jerry Stackhouse? Many people have talked about him being this up-and-coming G League coach who, you know, why don't you cast a net, find the best candidate, and say Jim Boylan is the best candidate out of the group? Okay, then go ahead. But I would like to talk to guys who have been working in successful programs before I say, well, you know, next year we're going to have this guy anyway, because he, you know what, by the way, he just listens to what I tell him to do. That's the Bulls' way.
Yeah.
Do what I want. You know, because, Jonathan, you're the one that's pointed it out all along. John Paxson really is the guy that wants to coach, but he doesn't want to actually coach.
Yes.
And so he's got Jim Boylan to do that for him.
I just think, Chris, that – and we got to move on because we got some other bigger fish to fry in the NBA. But I just wanted to say that the reason to answer your question of why the Bulls won't cast that net to get quality, what we perceive as quality head coaches or coaches that could take the Bulls to the next level, is because of power. It's because there will never be another head coach in the Paxson Gar administration that will be more powerful on the same par as them. Because they saw what happened with the Tom Thibodeau scenario, where Tom would close the door, lock the door, he'd just be concerned about what he's doing, and really would shut out Gar and Pax on basketball issues, and obviously they didn't like that. And so they're going to try to find someone they can get along for a while and get them to exactly where they want to be, and then fire them when they underachieve. That's why. You will never get a powerful name coach in here. They'll continue to go with the first-year coaches or someone that is getting a second chance but not that good. That's what they're going to look at instead of getting something that's quality. That's why.
Could you imagine these two ever staying as long as they have here in Chicago and Los Angeles without ever winning a title?
No, it wouldn't happen. I mean, look at Jim Buss. At some point, even Jim Buss had to leave, right? The young Buss, the Jeannie's brother. So, got to move on and do something different, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because we could really dive into the day to day, but like, you know, one of the first things that I mentioned was the lack of development for your two young players. Well, why is there a lack of development? Well, clearly the head coach is implementing something that's not getting the most out of these players. Well, who put the head coach into that position? Well, it was John Paxson deciding that Fred Hoiberg shouldn't be. Well, how about this? Those two bigs that you just drafted kind of are perfect for what Fred Hoiberg wants to do. Wouldn't you have liked to see maybe 15 to 20 games to see Carter and Markkanen play together with Fred Hoiberg to see what he could do with that?
Sure.
Oh, wait, never mind. You wanted to just kick him to the curb no matter what. You didn't want to give him a chance to actually succeed, so you fired him. Like, it all goes right back up to the top, and it goes past Paxson anyway, because all ownership cares about is if people are going to the United Center, not about actually winning. And like, that's why it's all so frustrating.
Let's talk a little bit about the balance of the Eastern and Western Conference. There are many people that thought that, especially media pundits, that the NBA would suffer with LeBron James going to the West with other superstars like the Stars and the Warriors and the two stars with Paul George and Russell Westbrook. With Oklahoma City, what's going on with Portland with Dame Lillard and McCollum. There were some thoughts about, well, maybe because LeBron's gone, now the East is not going to be watchable, which is not true. I think the league has done a great job of marketing Giannis Antetokounmpo as one of the faces of the East. And obviously Kawhi Leonard coming to Toronto, that really makes a difference. Victor Oladipo, what's happening with the Sixers with Jimmy Butler now coming over via trade. However, Chris, the numbers are a little bit down. because obviously there are more people staying up late for the West Conference games because of the star power. But I don't think that's really stopped me from really enjoying the league because, once again, just like every year, there are superstars to watch all across the nation, including in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't help that Boston has started off to the start that they have, where they're 26-18 in the fifth seed. It also doesn't help that Philadelphia, even though they're fourth, playing pretty good basketball, only 3.5 games back of first place Milwaukee in the East. They really haven't been the like it team this season. You know, I think a lot of people kind of hoped that the 76ers would jump into that next category of like legit contenders after what we saw them do this year. And after they made the trade for Jimmy Butler, they're still trying to work some stuff out. But I think that's where you really look at the health of the Eastern Conference, is that if Philly and Boston both are playing a little bit better basketball, you know, the Eastern Conference is pretty loaded. Now, like, you get down to 7-8 and people are going to complain that there's what, 10 teams that can make the playoffs in the West, but there's not enough teams that should make the playoffs in the East. Well, the difference between those 7-8 seeds in the Eastern Conference, when you look over to the West, is only about 2 games. Like, you know, the Utah Jazz are 8th in the West right now, and they're 25-21. Charlotte is 20-23. Miami's 21-21. So, like, it's only 4 or 5 games, the difference between those two. And, like, listen, I enjoy watching it all. I think it's great that Milwaukee's having the season they're having. Giannis Antetokounmpo has been fantastic, clearly an MVP candidate. I love that Toronto is right back where they are, that they haven't missed a beat, adding Kawhi Leonard. That's a star right there. I think the star power isn't as bright as it is in the West, but you have at least 5 really good competitive teams in the Eastern Conference. And then we mentioned Brooklyn earlier. Brooklyn's been a hell of a lot of fun to watch. And then you kind of get to the teams in the East that are not so desirable. Miami, Charlotte, Detroit, Orlando. Those are the teams that aren't as much fun. And it would really help the East if New York and Chicago could be decent, because then it kind of brings up the rest of the conference. But, like, if you want to sit and compare, obviously the West has more talent as far as depth for teams. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the East has been a lot of fun to watch. And I think this Milwaukee-Toronto race is going to be fun to watch for the rest of the second half.
I love this. I love what Milwaukee and Toronto are doing. So, from Toronto's standpoint, you get Kawhi Leonard, and you know that he makes a difference for a basketball team. Sometimes he's healthy, sometimes he's not. But the point is that I think they've done a really good job of making sure that he's not going to be running the ground. Like, they've given him some time off here in the first half, which I think is very smart on their part. Toronto very well could win the East. I don't know, but I will say this. For Milwaukee, the question I had for you coming into the season was, do they have enough shooting around them? And I think in the first half, they've definitely answered the question, yes. Middleton has really looked good. I really like what they're bringing. And of course, Giannis is having a coming out party. We already knew he was solid, but he really is getting better, I think, this season. So I think they have enough shooting. I'm wondering, is there a deal that's in place to try to enhance what they do to solidify themselves in the East? Because as is, it's good, but is it enough to win the East? That's my question.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't it kind of seem like they're missing that, like, third best player on a team, mm-hmm. or maybe the second? Like, Chris Middleton's really good, but I don't know if he's the second best player on a team that gets to the finals. Like, is Giannis good enough to be like by himself completely, like those old Cavalier teams with LeBron James the first go around? Like, I don't
or the
know
second.
If Giannis is barring Kyrie, but, like, you know, like, I don't know if Giannis has hit that height yet. Like, that LeBron was a different dude compared to what Giannis is doing right now. And I don't know if he's good enough to just will a team all the way to the finals. You know, if we go back to before this season, Real Plus Minus on ESPN.com projected the Milwaukee Bucks to win 45.2 games for the year.
Wow.
And they're sitting at 32-12 right now. I mean, how about that? They have completely gone over what anyone expected from the Milwaukee Bucks. Budenholzer, as their new head coach, has really implemented a good offensive system. They're playing good defense. I mean, Chris Middleton's going to get paid this summer. I just hope it's not from the Bulls.
Right, exactly. Yeah, don't take a step back. Like, if you're going to get paid, go to a team and a city that you can have fun in. And I'm not saying Chicago's not fun. I'm just saying that when you have a long season, you know, sometimes even the people that own the bars around here won't let you in.
Yeah.
They'll keep you in the snow when the team's bad.
Well, you know, the thing to worry about is, like, with the free agents that are going to be out there, there's going to be a lot of big names. And, like, he's going to fall into that category where he's probably going to get max money, but it's going to be from someone who missed on, like, the Durant and Jimmy Butler and all the big high-profile names. So, like, you know, at the like, last hour, you're going to see Phoenix coming in and offering Chris Middleton a max contract. And it's like, well, come on now. You're going to ruin the Bucks, and then you're never going to be heard from again. Like Joe Johnson 2.0.
Right, right. No, I hear you. So and you mentioned, by the way, the Celtics. I wrote this down to talk to you about it because it's funny that you mentioned them with them being the fifth seed as we take a look at today's games. The Kyrie Irving apology after their win was very curious to me because I don't know. And Kyrie is so much like Kobe as far as trying to screw with people's minds, says things for effect. What was your thoughts on his apology pretty much to LeBron James? Was that trying to send a message to his team saying that he needs to be able to be more understood on his role? Is he trying to speak to the Celtics, or was he really speaking to LeBron in that regard?
I think he was trying to tell us about himself. I think he was trying to tell us. But, like this is – when I heard him say that last night, the first person I thought of was Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. Because Jimmy Butler wants to tell us so badly that he's a leader and he's doing the right thing. And look at what I do because I lead and I'm the leader. It's like, nah, bro, you're not actually the leader. No one cares what you're saying. You're just like this really good player who talks too much. And like, I kind of felt like there's no reason for Kyrie to say that. One, it makes the younger guys look bad. Two, it's weird that, like, he would need to go and get approval from LeBron to say I'm sorry and get forgiveness and, like, approve the fact that now I'm a leader on my team, so let me know how I'm supposed to do it, and I can't believe it was so difficult when you were here, LeBron, I'm sorry, kiss the ring, and all this stuff. Like, it just came across as phony, but, like, him trying to prove that he's such a leader, so we should acknowledge how great of a leader he is, even though he's leading nobody. It came across as very Jimmy Butler-esque.
Yeah.
Like, you know on PTI where they play the game where they have to say a word, and then Wilbon will always say a word that's not a word? That's what I'm going to do here. It's Jimmy Butler-esque.
Let's see if we can put a graphic on the bottom of the screen like they do on PTI.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
they didn't have the flavor of a Jimmy Butler who's like not really leading anyone anywhere, but yet he has to go out and vocalize it.
Yeah, I don't think he has to say that he's a leader. I think that he could just show that he's the leader. I don't think it's something that has to be vocalized. I don't think he has to say it. I think that, you know, with him hitting shots the way he did the other night, I think that that's leadership. I think that leading in the media, that's also leadership. I don't think that he has to apologize now to put himself in a spotlight. The other thing is, I think is very strange, is that he says this now. And remember, he can go wherever he wants to at the end of the season. He may not even be with the Celtics. Yeah. So I don't know what kind of message he's sending there, knowing that more than likely he won't even be here in Boston next year. So I don't know.
Well, you saw the game against the Magic, the final possession.
Yep.
Where Jason Tatum got the ball from Horford and Tatum shot missed, and then the camera stayed on Kyrie, and Kyrie was mad because the play that was clearly drawn up was a handoff to Kyrie coming down the lane, which has worked before for Brad Stevens out of timeouts. And, you know, like, I agree with you, Jonathan. I wouldn't assume that Kyrie Irving is just going to stay in Boston, even though he said before the season at a Celtics ticket event that he was going to stay for the long term and this is home and all this stuff. And they have that commercial, the Nike commercial, where he's playing one-on-one against his dad at the TD Bank Garden or whatever. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't assume. I mean, hey, maybe that's where Bulls fans can get excited because they need a franchise elite point guard. Maybe that's the point guard they can go after. But I wouldn't just assume he's going to stay.
I didn't understand that. It's funny you mentioned Jimmy Butler, too, because Butler and the Sixers, they're playing Indiana on Thursday night, and Jimmy Butler in the news, so are the Timberwolves, so we'll try to weave this together as a first-half storyline, with Jimmy Butler demanding to be traded, wanting out of Minnesota, finally gets his way, goes to a Sixers team with a lot of good young parts, and we were wondering how good the Sixers would be with Jimmy Butler. It's a good team. It's a fourth seed right now as we record this, but even with Jimmy Butler on the team, he just couldn't settle in without letting the media know that Brett Brown's not putting him in the right spots offensively. Now, two sides of this. Jimmy's right when it comes to where Brett Brown is putting him offensively, because the same complaint came from Joel Embiid, if you remember this, last year. He was saying that, you know, they're not using me correctly. They should give me more time. It wasn't about the injury as much as it is where you put me on the floor to be able to help me flourish offensively. And so Jimmy Butler is right. He should have addressed it to Brett Brown first, though, and talked to him off the record versus blasting the media. But just typical Jimmy Butler, he doesn't understand that he's actually hurting his own money by just, you know, demanding a trade, coming to the Sixers, and then upset about how he's being utilized. And again, he'll be a free agent at season's end. So, I mean, Jimmy's just going to continue to pretend like he's a top 10 player when he really is not.
Yeah, he's not. And, you know, he really should play more like Klay Thompson. And I'm not saying the game itself, but he should really just try and fit in on the team. And when he has good nights or scoring nights, take advantage. But the other times, just show up and play defense and keep your mouth shut. Because that's the problem, is you're right. He envisions himself as the lead dog. He thinks he's James Harden, Steph Curry, Giannis. He's not. And, like, that's where it falls into this whole category of we see it with NBA teams all the time, because there's one basketball and five guys are on the court and not everyone can hold the basketball at once. So you have to be okay in your role and to excel in your role. If that role is not shooting and scoring the basketball. And if you're not the best player on the team, he's not. It's Joel Embiid. He's by far their most important player on the team. You need to find a way to be successful around that and to help that. And that's just not the type of player Jimmy Butler is. He is the perfect type of player to sign a big inflated contract this offseason with the Orlando Magic.
That won't work
the Knicks. You know, he's the perfect player to sign a big max deal with the New York Knicks and go play there. You can be the star. You can try and make all-star teams, but your team's never going to win anything because you don't get it. Like, I kind of thought for a long time that he was going to, in a winning situation, give back a little of the selfishness, but he doesn't. He doesn't.
This is who he is. So,
are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. But I guess the question is, like, which team's going to tolerate that for a long term deal? Because that's what's coming. Because he's going to be looking for like a max, and he's going to whatever team he's going to choose, he's going to be there for a while. He told the Sixers fans or told Sixers media that, you know, he could see himself being there for a while because of the team, but I don't know if I trust that. I mean, I don't know where Jimmy's coming from half the time. And that's too bad because talented player, still room to improve, but just the some of the antics is, to me, is unwarranted.
Well, and if you're a 76ers fan, aren't you using the rest of the season to kind of figure out if this chemistry project's going to work out? Because I don't know if I'd want to lock in Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons if they don't mesh well on the court. I would be more than happy to cut my losses and just say, you know what, leave in free agency. We were actually a better team last year when it was just Simmons and Embiid and we didn't have to worry about you, instead of having to commit a long-term contract to him. You know, like that's what I would be worried about with the 76ers, is them doubling down on something that's not going to work to begin with. You know, because they're going to have to pay. Ben Simmons is on his rookie deal next year, too. So Ben Simmons will be a free agent in the summer of 2021. So they're going to have to sign him to a max deal. They have Embiid, and you'll have to sign Jimmy Butler to one. I don't think it would be smart to sign Jimmy Butler. He'll be a perfect Phoenix Sun, you know, and that'll be that. You
what
know
are
what
you
mean?
Saying?
Like, it goes back to the Chris Middleton thing. There is going to be a market of teams that strike out on the big level guys, and that's where you're going to see Chris Middleton, Jimmy Butler get big contracts from bottom feeder garbage teams. Atlanta, New York, Chicago, Phoenix. That's what you're going to see this offseason.
Yeah, well, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know the Pacers fans are listening and say, what about us? What about us? Listen, we're not disrespecting you. We see what you're doing. I'm just wondering, just as I asked about the Celtics, is there another move for the Pacers? Because give McMillan credit. I know you're not the biggest McMillan fan, but give him credit, though. Here's what we've seen from Victor Oladipo. We have seen some tremendous games from him, some leadership from him, and I just think that that system works for what they're doing in Indiana. So they've had a really good start in the first half.
Yeah, Sabonis has played well, too. Yeah. They're tied for first in defensive efficiency with Oklahoma City and Milwaukee. So Indiana, one of the best defensive teams in the league. I think they've had a great start of the season. I mean, the fact that they're third in the East, and Oladipo is a really good player. I don't know if I would say he's a superstar. He's a star. If you want to, really dissect it, he's not a superstar. He's a really good player. And the fact that they're 29-14, they play really good defense. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. I like the Pacers, and especially what we saw them do last year in the first round, where they could have beaten that Cavs team. They should have beaten that Cavs team and knocked LeBron out of the Eastern Conference playoffs, and they lost. I really like the way they've rebounded this year and come back, and they're just as good as they were last year. I like that team.
So you heard what DeMarcus Cousins said the other day about the Golden State Warriors by saying that the Warriors are the most hated team in sports. And you saw my response on Twitter. My response on Twitter was this, at twitter.com, tweet Jay Hood. I pretty much said, maybe you think they're the most hated because you're now on the team. I think people may hate you, but I don't think they hate the Warriors. I don't have that feeling, unless I'm wrong, that people hate the Warriors. I think that they may hate the Patriots. They might hate Duke basketball. They might hate other teams that have had sustained success. But I think that the Stone Cold Steve Austin type feel, this heel but yet good guy, rough image of the Warriors, I think resonates especially with younger viewers and younger fans of the NBA, because the cockiness of Steph Curry, I think people respect it, because who's going to stop him? Clearly a lot of teams can't stop him. So I don't know why DeMarcus said that, because I don't see I don't hate the Golden State Warriors, and in my circle, we don't hate the Warriors either, and you're in my circle, so I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, and the cockiness, that comes from the top. Right, when Joe Lacob says that the organization is light years ahead of the rest of the NBA, that's the same thing as a Steph Curry shimmy shake after hitting three threes in the third last night.
Right?
Like you don't go out there as an owner saying that we're light years ahead of the rest of the league unless you're cocky. And I don't know. I feel like in today's day and age, a little bit of that and the showmanship, I think that goes a long way, especially in social media. I think people gravitate towards that. I think people like it. I would not agree that they're the most hated team in America. I think the examples you gave are much better, especially with the Patriots. I don't think anyone likes the Patriots anymore. Just from Belichick and everything with Spygate and Tom Brady. And even though Brady is going to go down as the greatest quarterback ever, there's a lot of people that find reasons to dislike him in today's day and age. If you look across the NBA, I would say that the Lakers are way more unlikable than Golden State, just for the fact that, of course, they signed LeBron James in the offseason. They got Lance Stephenson, Lonzo Ball, Rajon Rondo. they've got a bunch of guys who are not very likable. I get it that people don't like DeMarcus Cousins. I get it that a lot of people don't like Draymond. And for some reason, Kevin Durant thinks the entire world is against him. But I don't see the hate that he's talking about. It's, you're right, Jonathan. It's not like they're rolling up and it's just like, remember the year when LeBron went to the Heat and it was hands down, you could feel anger in arenas when the Heat would roll in, Wade, Bosh, and LeBron, and they were clearly the most hated team in America. This is not that by any stretch.
I don't even understand what he's talking about. I just don't know.
Yeah,
like, but here's the thing with DeMarcus Cousins. He can't breathe without feeling that way. And some need that edge, Chris, for whatever reason. Like, he needs that edge to be able to be like, oh, everybody hates me, so I'm going to go out and play. Now, I'll say this. Before he even steps on the court with the Golden State Warriors, I'll say this. He makes them unlikable to me because here's another guy that's talented and just a brooding superstar, very similar to Kevin Durant. You mentioned Kevin Durant thinks the whole world's against him when he's the best or second best player in the NBA and will never understand that people love him, but yet he looks at social media and says, oh, everybody's against me. If that's what he needs, that's fine, but it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. Brooding superstar, you know? So
yeah, it's so weird. And like, Durant uses it as fuel. Like, I always enjoy listening to Durant talk because it seems as if he's a big basketball fan himself, and he understands the history of the league. So he uses it to say, like, well, guess what? I'm going to prove that I'm the best player ever. And you're like, you're not the best player ever. And then you kind of start to think about it, and you're like, well, now I kind of understand why he said what he said about LeBron earlier this year, because he sees himself as an equal to LeBron. He doesn't want to join LeBron. He wants people to say that Kevin Durant is better than LeBron.
That still wouldn't but it still wouldn't be good enough.
Know it wouldn't be good enough. There'd be something else past that. Then you talk about Jordan. Then you talk about someone else. But like I at least understand Durant a little bit because he's coming at it from a basketball obsessed mind. DeMarcus Cousins is coming at it where if he was crossing the street and you looked his way the wrong way, he would yell at you. He's that guy, right? Like you know that he always has a problem with the officials. You know at some point he and Draymond are going to get into it. You know that he and Durant are probably going to get into it. He and Steve Kerr will probably get into it. He just has a bad attitude when it comes to all of this stuff. So it doesn't surprise me, but like he's definitely the guy that would scowl at you when you like cross the street, but you like accidentally go in front of him, and it's his turn to walk, or so, you know what I mean? Like he's that guy.
Everybody needs that edge, but I guess some need more than others, which I just don't understand. I don't get this. So, who is the first half MVP of the league, and why is it James Harden?
So you're just ruling out Steph Curry?
Who?
He's just out of the conversation.
Listen, man, most direct isolations this season, James Harden.
Yeah.
Harden's got to keep up this pace. Jason Joseph had this on ESPN. The stat run of James Harden has been incredible to watch, but raises some interesting questions. James Harden became the fourth player in league history to have multiple streaks of 50-point games, joining Wilt Chamberlain, Elgin Baylor, and Kobe Bryant. Harden's last feat was dropping 58 against the Nets in a loss, raising some key concerns about his style of play. He leads the NBA in direct isolations, nearly doubling the second closest player. I mean, Harden walks with DeRozan, Blake Griffin, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant as far as direct isolations this season. The numbers that he's put up have just been tremendous. Now, we look in the NBA in the prism of who's going to get close to or win a championship, or who's going to get close to the Warriors or try to beat the Warriors. I know that's not the Rockets, but I will say individually, James Harden has just been tremendous.
He has. And if you break down the numbers even more, the thing that's impressive to me is right now today, through 41 games, so halfway through the season, he's averaging 35.4 points per game. Okay? And that's crazy to me because the last time we saw scoring like that to lead the league, you have to go back to Jordan in 1987-88. In 87, he averaged 37 points per game for 82 games. He played every single game that year. He was 23. He averaged 37 points per game. In 88, Jordan averaged 35 points per game. He played in all 82. And then the rest of the career, he was around 32, 33, and so on. But, like, the point being, since Jordan in 88, we haven't seen someone average 35 points for an entire season. And James Harden is halfway through the year, and he's at 35.4. You're right. He is the MVP. It's been incredible to watch. And I think what's even more incredible to watch is that not only do you look at all the isolation numbers you just mentioned, and the fact that when you watch them play, like last night against the Nets, how he, each and every possession, is just the only one that touches the ball. And he's doing it like 35 feet away from a basket, dancing by himself, getting himself open, and hitting these shots. It is incredible to watch. I've never seen anything like it.
and that just goes along with what we're seeing with the league. Records are set across the NBA, as this has been a historic week as we record this. Think about this, man. Records were set across the NBA. We saw the most combined threes made in a game, 43. The most combined threes attempted in a game, 106. And the fewest combined turnovers in a game, 7. All in different games. So you look at this league now, and for me, week by week, you're trying to figure out something that you've never seen before. Because the history is being set, Chris, we're seeing things we haven't seen before, and it's really thrilling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the league is an extremely healthy place. And, you know, a lot of people, I've seen some social commentary by people who don't really watch basketball, but, you know, you gotta get on Twitter and fire off dumb tweets. You know, some of these games, right? The other night, someone in the first half had 83 points. Didn't the 76ers have like 83 points in the first half the other night?
I believe so. Let me look that up.
Well, you don't have to look it up, Danny. But the thing that I think is amazing is you see that 83 points in the first half, 145 points at the end of the game, James Harden scoring 60 points again. And then you get these idiots on Twitter who are like, oh, I wish the NBA played defense, and these guys just are out there running like the YMCA. It's like, dude, are you serious? Do you remember when games in the late 90s, early 2000s were like Eastern Conference Final game, and it would end like 76-59?
Right.
do you remember those?
Yes.
Do you remember the NBA Finals with the Spurs and the Nets? And, like, those games are ending, like, 84-79, 80-82. How slow and boring that was.
The Sixers beat the Timberwolves 149-107. They scored 83 in the first half.
Yeah. 83 points in the first half. Like people then get on Twitter and they have to fire off these dumb tweets. And it's like, dude, like, I guarantee you, if you are the guy firing off the stupid tweet about too much scoring in the NBA, I guarantee if you sat down and tried to watch a game from 2002, you'd gouge your eyes out. You would. Like if you sat down and said, well, what about the good old days, the Jordan Bulls, and you sat down and actually physically watched a game from 1997, you wouldn't make it through halftime. You would go and do something else because it's that boring.
I challenge
any basketball fan.
Yeah.
And the Jordan years were great, and I love everything about that 90s era, right? But I challenge you to go and physically watch a game from the late 90s. It is a different sport than what we're watching now. It is completely different.
Well, I guess, Chris, I guess someone with a fresh set of eyes looking at basketball in the 90s would say, boy, these teams really having a hard time scoring.
Yeah, right.
That's what they would say. And why are those streamers and those damn balloons coming down from the ceiling after someone hit a three? Was that a special occasion?
Right.
I mean, that's
why is everyone standing huddled in the paint? I don't understand. everyone's standing all in the same 5-foot radius. There's all this empty court. What's the point of this?
You know what?
No, seriously. Like you, sometimes on NBA TV, you'll catch one of those NBA classics games, and those hardwood classics, and the game will be like from 96 or something, and it will be like you're watching it's like watching Pong, you know, compared to today, you know, compared to Fortnite. That's what it looks like.
You know what?
That's what it looks like.
Can I tell you something? And you and you and I are going to be the first ones with this, and it's going to trend once we put it out on social media. Can I tell you something? The basketball in the 90s looks like Ice Cube's league.
Yeah, 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 it does. No, that's good.
Where's the freedom of movement in that league?
No.
Okay.
No, it's dudes grappling each other in the paint.
that's what it looks like Ice Cube's league in the summer that we see.
Same thing. So I mean, we get it. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a basketball fan and you get it. But if you are around someone who's telling you that there's no defense and thus all the scoring is negative and all this, tell that person to go sit down and watch a game from 1994 and then have them get back to you, because it's a different sport. Hey, come on now.
Don't forget to, kids, to make sure that you mark your calendars for July 1st. You know, get the family out of the way. It's just you and your laptop, you and your phone, because Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving, DeMarcus Cousins, Chris Middleton, Kristaps Porzingis, Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler are among those that will be among the 200 players that's going to hit free agency on July 1st. That is going to be a holiday. Let me make sure I'm not working.
Ooh.
That's going to be it's going to be great.
Can we do like a 4-hour live show on 1000 that night?
I would love that, actually. Actually, let me see. July 1st, that's a Monday.
Free agent special?
You know what? That's a Monday. I think I can get that booked. Seriously.
We should do that.
That's a Monday.
We should do it leading up to midnight. Yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's going to be something on July 1st. That's going to be great.
Tobias Harris, huh?
Well, listen. I've talked to Tobias Harris a couple of times, and he always is hungry to go someplace and really show what he can do. And
yeah,
I don't think
that's why I'm saying, for if you're a Bulls fan, isn't that a name that you'd like to spend some money on, opposed to Jabari Parker?
No, I actually want him to stay in the league. So no, I wouldn't want him.
All right.
No, no. So no. The answer to that question is no. I would not want that. The Nuggets, I've seen them 4 times in the last 2 weeks, because before we did this podcast, I wanted to be able to kind of keep an eye on the Nuggets. And in the Warriors game, I'm going to rule that out because it's Golden State. They're going to beat your ass anyway. So and it was a lot of scoring in that game. But I'm wondering, from what we've seen from Denver, who was the number one team in the West for a little bit here, whether or not what they do is sustainable, meaning that it's a good basketball team. I'm a fan of what Jokic does, because he's just not a guy that's just camping out in the lane. He can also, show the range from the outside. He can do a lot of different things. Millsap, very good. I think they have a decent enough bench. Murray is underrated. I'm just wondering what they do sustainable for them to be a real tough out in the playoffs in the West. That's the question.
Well, and Will Barton hasn't even played this year. I mean, he's played in 5 games this season. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, yeah, it's sustainable in the West. Here's the thing. You would like to promote the feel-good story of the NBA year. You would also like to promote that maybe someone like Nikola Jokic could maybe get MVP votes. That all sounds good and great, and I love the backcourt of Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. The problem is, for all that's worth, they're the 2 seed in the West right now, and between 2 and what, 10, you're only looking at 6 ball games that separate Denver from like the Sacramento Kings.
Mm-hmm.
So like it, for how good they've been this season, you almost wish that they would have built some kind of a lead to show for it, because to your point, what can it sustain in the playoffs? Well, it kind of depends on the matchup. Like, if they're playing the Clippers like they would be matched up with today, yeah, they could probably get past the Clippers, and then they have to face either Oklahoma City or the Spurs, and they could probably beat at least the Spurs. I don't know if they could beat Oklahoma City in a playoff series, but, like, you know, it kind of all depends on that. Like, if they fall back, like, if Oklahoma City catches them or Portland catches them, at some point, I think it would be tough to say that it's sustainable. I think they're just such a good story, and everything makes so much sense. But you kind of wish that they had a better first half.
You're talking about trade. That's something that Denver could use. They could use just an extra, another shooting guard that could help their offensive prowess.
Well, and Isaiah Thomas hasn't played for them yet either. He's there.
Well.
Right? So Will Barton, who's a shooting guard, and Isaiah Thomas is a scorer. Theoretically, you get both of those guys back, you have a lot of scoring on that team, and they're finally playing defense under Malone, and that's the thing that they didn't do last year and why they're so good this year. So, I mean, I love watching them play. They're fun. I just kind of feel like they're one of those fun regular season teams, and then once we get to the playoffs, a bad matchup could just knock them out within, you know, 4 or 5 games.
Anything else in the West that stands out to you that you like? Like the Clippers?
Oh,
maybe?
Well, okay. If you're going to give me 15 to 20 seconds, I've got to talk about Luka Doncic. I mean, the fact that Dallas is 20-24 with that roster just proves how good Doncic is and how he controls everything. I was watching him last night, and they lost to the Spurs in a tough ball game. But, like, each possession, he is controlling the ball. He's controlling where guys move. He is doing everything, and he's 19 years old. Mm-hmm. I think it's under-talked. People are not talking about it enough. The phenom that is Luka Doncic is living up to everything that we heard about from coming over from Europe. And we haven't seen a rookie play like this since LeBron at a teenage level. It is incredible, and I understand why he's right now being voted for into the All-Star game at the moment. It's only 50% of the vote, but right now he would be an All-Star based on the fan vote. It's awesome.
And gets it. Don't forget about that part of it. Also gets it. And the reason why, I mean, if you're an NBA fan, you've seen this on the starters, or if you've seen it on NBA TV, or you've seen it online, but the personality is there. As soon as the Dallas Mavericks start getting good, you'll see him more on TNT. And when, once he becomes not a digital guy, but a television superstar where he's on the same line as Embiid and Antetokounmpo and some of these other young guys that with personality, it's going to pop for him, and it's going to pop for the Mavericks.
Well, absolutely. And it's the charisma is there. And then also, people always worry about NBA stars who get too much attention too early, and they can't handle it at age 19, 20, and being the guy in a franchise. Well, Luka Doncic has been a professional, playing professional basketball since 13, since he was age 13. So, like, this is not too big for him, and you can tell. Just watch the games. You can tell that he moves like a veteran. He has the composure of a veteran, and that's why, you know, a ton of people always talk about his clutch stats. He's posting numbers that are like all-time great clutch seasons, and it's his rookie year. It's pretty incredible to watch.
All right, a couple other things too about the Western Conference with the New Orleans Pelicans. You know, the Anthony Davis question is still there. The Pelicans are 10 games behind the Warriors. They are not one of the top 8 teams in the West. But the Pelicans, and what we saw the other night with Golden State and New Orleans is exactly what we have been seeing under Alvin Gentry and with the Pelicans for a while now, where, yes, Davis is there, and, yes, he's a difference maker, and, yes, it's a good team. But it just like a lot of these other teams in the West, they just are just going to underachieve. If the Pelicans don't make the playoffs, I think that solidifies Davis looking someplace else. And it's too bad because there should be a star to watch in that market. But once Davis leaves, they're going to shutter it down. It'll be the end. They'll move the Pelicans out of New Orleans in 10 years or less, I think, because it's not viable. We've talked about this before. After Katrina, you don't have people that are with enough butts in seats to keep that franchise moving. There's some Fortune 500 companies, but is it enough to be able to keep New Orleans going? Is there enough smoothie drinks at Smoothie King to keep the Pelicans viable? And so if Davis leaves, which is very – I don't want to see it, but I think it's going to happen, then I fear for the Pelicans franchise.
Okay, if we're moving the Pelicans, I'm going to give you 3 options. Where are you moving them?
Seattle.
Is it 1, Vegas? Is it 2, St. Louis, or is it 3, everyone's favorite pick, Seattle?
Well, see, now you threw Vegas in there, so now Hold on a second.
well, everyone would say Seattle, right? Because they're the Western Conference. They're the city that had a great fan base, who had a great team. They left and this and that. So give them back the Sonics. I only say St. Louis because, like, last week, some, like, billionaire owner person who wants to bring the NBA to St. Louis started piping up down there in St. Louis that it would be a great NBA city. And I was like, what, St. Louis? Get out of here, guy, whatever your name is.
Sure.
And then everyone thinks every pro team should go to Vegas anyway. So,
Well, look, Seattle's number one on that list because it makes no sense that there is no franchise in Seattle in the NBA. That doesn't make sense, and it's going to happen. I think that Adam Silver looks at it, my boss from the NBA. I think that he looks at Seattle as the next destination. But St. Louis is very interesting. Because if you are a billionaire in St. Louis and you want to bring the NBA there, I think that because you don't have, besides the Blues and college basketball, you don't have any winter sports there. So I think that if it's something, if it's a good franchise, why not have a franchise in St. Louis? Bring the spirit back. Have Bob Costas do the play-by-play as he did 40 years ago, whatever it was. Bob's out of work. Let him do the play-by-play.
So I saw.
Could you see that, though? Could you see us, you and I, taking a road trip if St. Louis was good? Like, all right, never mind about Chicago. We'll just take the four-hour drive down to St. Louis and make a weekend of it. I could see that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like, St. Louis is exactly the type of market that the NBA thrives in. They do really well in the markets where there's not much sports. Professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they do really well in the markets that have, like, one other pro team. And, like, St. Louis is perfect because all they have is baseball. So in the winter, like you said, the spirits of St. Louis, the fighting spirits, because you got to make it a little flashy now to be like a fighter plane, I think that would be a big hit. Obviously, Vegas would be there because, you know, the Raiders are going to be there. An MLB team at some point is going to be there. The Golden Knights are already there. So the NBA, I'm sure, wants to get to Vegas. But I think St. Louis is something to keep an eye on in the discussions with. I just hope that they don't come in and swoop Seattle. Like, that would really suck.
How about this? How about if you're going to have two more franchises, one in St. Louis, one in Seattle, and the cookout for the All-Star game is always in Vegas?
Hey, that'll work for everyone,
right? I mean,
nobody will have a problem with that.
Yeah, who's going to say no to Vegas? I mean, there's still consternation about them even being in Charlotte here for the All-Star game.
Yeah,
but you know, they waited a couple years and now they're in there. And I don't know what you got to be in that market because there's an NBA team there, kind of. But I'm just saying that, you know, there's still some concern about the NBA coming to Charlotte, and do you feel that that's a world-class enough city to be able to hold the All-Star game? How well is that going to get over? I mean, that's a big question. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it won't have the same I'm sure people will watch the events, but I'm sure people going will not rave about it like they do when it's in a bigger metropolitan area. You know, like, that's what people really talk about is, like, is the event center near where the arena is, near where all the hotels are? Like, that's what people care about.
Yeah. Most disappointing team for me in the first half is the Wizards.
That's a good pick. Are the Bulls disqualified?
The Bulls are not in the conference. Would you stop going back to the Bulls? No. They're only disappointing because we told John Paxson that they're a playoff team if they stayed healthy, and they're not. So there's no question with Wall going down, and you're right, Beal makes them a better basketball team, and who knows, they could be a top eight team before it's all squared away. I just think that the whole thing is disappointing. The infighting with Gortat, getting him off the basketball team is very disappointing, I think. And so you would think they'd be further along, but they are not. And plus, you're not a big Scott Brooks fan. That's why you don't care about the Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is the Wizards, or I would also give you the Jazz. I think a lot of people thought the Jazz would be this team to take this next step, and they have not. They're basically about the same team they were last year, hoping to scrape into the playoffs, maybe they'll make a run, but probably not.
What has been your NBA League Pass guilty pleasure? I'll give you mine, and you give me yours.
Go for it.
Me? First?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, besides Luka Doncic and watching the Mavs every night, it's been fun to watch the Clippers. I don't think a lot of people expected anything from the Clippers this year, and they're a really damn good team. And Doc Rivers is doing a great job coaching up their mismatch of random players, Tobias Harris, Lou Williams. I like watching the Clippers. They're fun. They've probably been my guilty pleasure outside of Luka Doncic this year.
Well, look, what do we always say? You want Doc to coach your team, you just don't want him to generally manage it.
Yeah.
There's no question Doc Rivers can coach now. Okay, and let's watch now July 1st, see what kind of Pied Piper he is. Maybe I shouldn't use that phrase anymore, R. Kelly, but maybe we'll see what kind of leader he is to be able
I watched the whole thing. We've watched it twice. That's how much it's been on in my apartment.
That's now that I use that as a bridge term to talk about trying to get free agents, but I have to watch that phrase now because of Ara Kelly outside of Kenwood Academy.
No, to your point though, they're going to have cap space this summer. They only have $60 million to the books for this year, for next year. And in 2021, they have $9 million on the books. They have virtually no money dedicated to their future.
Is it okay if I have Autumn on the show to talk about R. Kelly?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay,
She's watched it all twice.
Well, because I knew she was watching it because she was talking about it on Instagram. So
and I think a couple of the girls went to her high school. She went to OPRF. So,
oh man, I have some stories about that off the air that I have to tell you. My league pass guilty pleasure because of my hours, and you know my hours here in Chicago, mm-hmm. So I'm watching a lot more West Coast games, is the Sacramento Kings.
Okay, yeah.
And that is not, that's fun now, okay? So we're talking about Fox's development, Cauley Stein's development, Buddy Hield.
He's playing well.
Yeah, he is. I thought he'd be remember the draft? I told you I thought he'd be a solid pro. I didn't expect him to be like all-star, perennial all-star, but he's giving you 20 points a game and five assists. So he's actually better than I thought he was at Oklahoma. So,
yeah, I agree. Yeah, especially for being 30.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he came to the league looking like that.
Second year in the league, he's 35 years old.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly looks like he's been around for 30 years. There's no question about that.
You saw the story earlier this year that Oklahoma didn't know his correct age, or like the Kings didn't. They sent out a media release and they didn't have his age right.
Right.
And then they went back and they said that they never had records that his age was different. It was this weird, like, 4-day story about no one knew how old Buddy Hield really was. Like, he's 28 years old, second year in the league.
The Bahamas, man.
It's like, oh, man, that changes my perception of him. I was going to say, oh, this budding star, he's 22, and look what he's doing. He's 24, look what he's doing.
I knew when I interviewed him at the Hotel Intercontinental for the NBA radio, and when I shook his hand, it was a man's handshake. It wasn't a young man's handshake. It was a man. Like he had some experience. Like he's been through some stuff. See, it's Buddy.
He saw some things.
Buddy Hield, quality guy. And all
it wasn't the same handshake that Kelly Oubre gave you.
Oh my God, that guy. Oh my God. I knew he was a flake and a weird guy when I met him. I'm like, oh my God. It's like, this is not going to work. Yeah, coach said I should go for the NBA. Yeah, coach thought it would be best if I went to the, I bet. Get the hell out of my program.
Sure. Get out of here. Oh, move along.
Gosh.
Seen that before.
Worst. All right, to the social media. You might have it in front of you. I have some as well.
I've got Twitter in front of me.
Okay, I got Facebook in front of me. I've got the baby and cat pictures of Facebook, facebook.com. And question from George Norwood. I know him. He's a big Pacer fan. He asked the question, is there any reason why the Pacers are not talked about to be treated? I'm sorry. Is there a reason why the Pacers are not talked about to be a threat to win the East?
I think the answer is it's because of the star power on the other teams ahead of them standings, right? Like Milwaukee has Giannis, so that's why they get talked about. And Toronto, they're probably the best roster, and they have the best player in Kawhi Leonard. So that's probably the answer, is that people don't think that Oladipo is on the same level as the other stars.
Andy Mullen and Justin Juice Rothman are pretty much asking the same question. They're asking you, will the Bulls be active when the trade deadline comes? And then the other question is, who's the most tradable for Chicago?
I think if they are active, it's just moving off players that they want to get off the books. Like, they're not going to be active to help their future in, like, finding a young player in a bad situation to kind of, like, see if he has something to give. Like there's no way the Bulls are going to trade for Dennis Smith Jr.
Right.
Right? Like they're not going to do that. But if they can find someone to take Jabari Parker, even though he apparently has been on the trade block for over 2 months now and no one has sniffed around except for the New York Knicks, and they weren't interested. So I would imagine Jabari's going to be here for the rest of the season. I would try and move Robin Lopez. For some reason, the Bulls have this thing, thinking that he's playing this great leadership role where they can't move him along. Like, who cares? Let him go win somewhere. Let him go win with Golden State. The other person I would look at to maybe move, I would kind of see what happens here with Bobby Portis, because he's going to be a free agent this summer. He's definitely someone I like. I don't know if I'm spending big money on Bobby Portis. So if you could send him to a team that needs help down low, who's trying to win, and maybe you can get back some assets in return, that might help you in the future more than sinking a bad contract into Bobby Portis. Like, I know that Philly has been looking for, like, a backup center, a second big. Like, if you could swing a deal to get something back, I'm sure Philly doesn't really have a whole lot because they've dealt a lot recently. But if you could find someone to take Bobby Portis so you don't have to pay him this summer, I don't think that that would be such a bad thing. And I like Bobby Portis. We just know how the Bulls usually operate. They overvalue guys they draft, and then you get stuck with these contracts that no one wants. I don't want to do that with Bobby Portis.
All right. What do you have on Twitter? Any questions coming your way on Twitter?
Yeah. Steve Berger tweets us, with ownership being who they are and Garpax being who they are and Boylan being who he is, why shouldn't we all stop being Chicago Bulls fans? And he didn't just write Bulls. He actually tweeted that at Chicago Bulls. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not a Bulls fan. So let's just start there. I'm an NBA fan. And the reason why that is the case is because I need to be able to be clear-minded and looking at good basketball, because if I'm just a Bulls fan, just locked in on Bulls basketball, then I won't understand what it takes to be able to be a good organization. I watched around. This is why I watch so much NBA, because I can take a look at how teams are built. I can see how teams are play, and I can see the culture of these teams. Look where Milwaukee was even before Jason Kidd and where they are right now. Look at where Toronto was. Look at where Indiana is. It doesn't make any sense for Chicago to continue to struggle the way they are. So, you know, you talk about being Bulls fans. I'm not one. I am not. I'm a fan of the league because the culture of the league is interesting. The way teams go about their business is interesting. And keep in mind, it is sports. So there's always organizations that are run badly, poorly. But, you know, Chicago is just one of them that just continues to be the mom and pop store. Teams like them, teams like the Cavs now without LeBron, you know, they just can't get out of their own way. So I'm not part of that group.
Lowry Marketing's burner account tweeted us. He's a big listener of the station, follows both of us all the time. In the aftermath of Boylan getting a slight bump in pay, it's clear that management isn't completely sold on keeping him around next year with only a $1 million guarantee. Who would you like to see take the helm from him? And I would love Adrian Griffin. We kind of already addressed this, but is there anyone else that we didn't mention that you would like to see them talk to?
As a head coach, right?
Yeah, as a head coach.
Well, here's the thing. Yes, there's a lot of names that I would love for them to talk to. But again, I could give you Mark Jackson someone I probably would not hire for the Bulls, but I'll just give you a name like Mark Jackson. I give you a name like Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff Van Gundy still is coaching, by the way. He coaches the U.S. men's team as they go across the country while he still does color commentary on ESPN. I can give you guys that have coached before that are looking for another opportunity. But it won't work with Garn Pax because they could have some success and they'll be the fall guy for it if they don't get to the top. And it's not like that there's a ceiling on the Eastern Conference, because even though Giannis is interesting, Toronto's good, Indiana and Philadelphia, Boston are good teams, that doesn't necessarily mean that Chicago can't be a better basketball team. So the point is, it's not LeBron holding them down. They're holding themselves down. And so, there's plenty of candidates, Chris, but you know, you have to take a look at like assistants on benches and guys that never had a chance before. Those are the choices that Garn Pax will go for, and then they'll fire him in 3 years.
Yeah, Bill Dozier tweets basically the same thing. He wanted to know who we thought would be a good coach for the Bulls going forward. So we've addressed that already, but thank you for the tweet, Bill. And one last tweet from Ryan Jarvis. He actually doesn't even ask a question. He just has a GIF of Forrest Gump running down the street, and it says, running, players running, fans running away from the team. So more of a statement, not a question, but thank you, Ryan, for chiming in.
Well, I guess that's a good point.
And there you have it.
That's a good point. There's plenty of coaches that's out there. Like I can give you a guy that has not been head coach before, but again would be limited because he'd probably want too much power trying to have full autonomy of his own team. Is Sam Cassell?
Yeah, that's a good point. Cassell is a good name.
Yeah, that's Sam Cassell should be coaching this. I can give you Juwan Howard, who would command the room. Chicago guy, the longtime assistant. I can give you Lloyd Pierce from the Sixers. Assistant coach. I can give you Jerry Stackhouse, who's been in the G League and with the Toronto Raptors. There's plenty of guys that you could look at. Howard Eisley, who played for the Jazz, I think he's on the Knicks staff, if I'm not mistaken. Popeye Jones, Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, there's guys all over the place. If I could just wipe clean and have my own front office, I would hire Shane Battier and Juwan Howard as a coach. Battier to run basketball operations and Howard to be the coach.
Fine.
That's what I would do.
Fresh set of eyes.
Well, and they come from an organization that's had success in the past. Yeah. The Miami Heat has been ran well. That outside of the Hassan Whiteside signing, they do things the right way down there.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and while they thought that Whiteside would be able to develop some kind of three-point shot, not the case. That might have been a Riley misstep right there. So
he's getting old.
Yes, I noticed that too. Yes, he has. All right, so my next shows, Chris, that are NBA related, will be Saturday night, January 19th, 10 to midnight Central, after the first primetime ABC game on Saturday.
All right.
I'll be on it on SiriusXM, Sirius 207, XM 86, and the SiriusXM app. So if you're an NBA fan, if you're driving around, turn on NBA radio. I'll be doing post game for that particular game, which is, as I scroll down, Lakers Rockets, right?
Ooh, that's good. See if LeBron's back.
Yeah, Lakers Rockets on ABC. I'll be on after that game on SiriusXM NBA radio. And then the Saturday after that, I'll be on again from 10 to midnight Central Time on the 26th. I'll be doing a post game there. I believe Golden State's involved in that game, if I'm not mistaken. But I'll be doing post games on NBA radio for those two Saturdays in a row.
Did I see it correct on the schedule that there's a Friday night Black and Hood show coming up on 1000?
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, yes, on the 25th of January.
All right, let's go.
And on Friday, February 1st.
Let's do it.
And Friday, February 8th.
All right.
And Friday, February 15th.
There we go.
So yes, there'll be a run of Hood and Black shows on Friday nights on ESPN 1000. That's we're revealing that for the first time here. So
he never works on Fridays.
I'll be there, Pat, on Friday with Chris Black.
I'll let Feeder know.
Yes, got a few Fridays open, so why not work with someone we want to work with? And I settled for you. All right. Don't forget to follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Black. Ignore all the negative tweets around Chris Black. Listen, he's just looped into these things, and we just support Chris. I ask you to support him on Twitter because he's going through a really tough time right now, and he's just looped into conversations he doesn't want to be looped into. So at Chris Black.
I'm just trying to get through the day, man. I'm just trying to watch some hoops and enjoy. I don't need the nonsense.
So if you're an NBA fan or if you're a basketball fan, make sure you hit us up on Twitter at Chris Black and at Tweet Jay Hood, and we will talk to you after the All-Star Week in February. Wow. Right? We'll talk in February. Yeah. We'll have another edition of our Love of the Pod NBA podcast. So looking forward to that because we got to look at some second half storylines and get ready for the playoffs, and that's right around the corner.
Can't wait. The season's heating up, and it's been fantastic to watch at this point. I can't wait to see what happens.
All right, my friend. We will talk soon.
All right. Talk to you later, Jonathan.
He's Chris Black. I'm Jonathan Hood. It's the Love of the Pod, produced by Felix Reyes on the other side of the glass. Don't forget to hit us up on Twitter, at Chris Black, at Tweet Jay Hood. Thanks for listening. For the Love of the Pod, our NBA podcast, right here on ESPN.com. Boy, Chris had a great phone, didn't he, Felix? Oh, good stuff. Pretty good stuff. Yeah.
Was it good? Was it a good phone?
You still there?
Yeah. A good phone?
Goodbye.
That was Love of the Pod with Chris Black and Jonathan Hood. Join them again next time for more Round Ball conversation. Round Ball? I don't get paid enough for this.